Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church in Minneapolis. We're on the web at www.cicministry.org. This is Todd Kramus, your host for the next half hour. I'm filling in for the vacationing Dick Cuffell. And once again, it's our pleasure to speak with Bob DeWay, pastor of Twin City Fellowship and author of Critical Issues Commentary. Today's topic, global warming, blind faith, and global delusion, which is essentially a book review of Taken by Storm, the Troubled Science, Policy, and Politics of Global Warming. Pastor, this seems like quite a departure from our typical CICs that we're so used to reading.
Yes, it is. Normally, I'm writing about theological issues that concern what God has said in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what we call special revelation, what God said about himself, and so on. But there's also general revelation, and general revelation is what we can learn by looking around the world that we live in and using our rational minds, our ability to perceive and to deduce and so on. And deception can happen either on the level of special revelation, where people misinterpret the Bible.
Which is where we most often find ourselves at CIC.
Yeah, that's our main thing, and
right.
That's where we'll be back on the next issue. But I believe that this global warming has actually become almost a religion, because people are believing it by blind faith. So because so many people are being deceived by this, and because we have some famous evangelical leaders like Rick Warren and so forth, Brian McLaren,
sure,
signing global warming statements, it's almost become an issue that we have to deal with. So I decided to take it on.
So these statements are essentially a pact or a vow to get with this effort to stop global warming.
Right.
Okay.
To sign on to this whole belief system that includes the idea that humans are causing global warming and that we need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. So as we go through this book, the authors, two Canadian college professors, by the way, eminently qualified, it would appear, to discuss a topic like this. Was it published in 2002, a revised edition in 2007?
Yes, exactly. I met a Dr. E. Kelvin Beisner out at a conference I was at, and he's the one who told me about this book and highly recommended it. So I went back and ordered the book, and they were working on the revised edition. So when it came out, I got it. And so the 2007 edition by authors Christopher Essex and Ross McKittrick is the one that I'm reviewing in this article.
What's the thesis? Is there an opening salvo they let us have it with?
Well, their thesis is that there's this thing called the doctrine. They call it the doctrine.
The doctrine, in quotes.
The doctrine.
Okay.
And this doctrine of certainty is what people are told to believe. So people are telling us, you must believe this. This is the way it is. And they say it's like a dogma that has to be believed or you're not a good citizen.
Believe this or you're not a good citizen. Wonderful. A lot of that going on. It's not just science. It's also religion. It's politics. You're either with us on this or
yeah,
you're not, and you're wrong.
Yeah, it's sort of the political correct idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a fact. I list in my article about this the points of the doctrine that they outline at the beginning of the book, and then they go on to explain from a scientific perspective what we can and cannot know about future climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me just list those 9 points of the doctrine of certainty. Number one, the Earth is warming. Number two, warming has already been observed. Number three, humans are causing it. Number four, all but a handful of scientists on the fringe believe it. Number five, warming is bad. Number six, action is required immediately. Seven, any action is better than none. Eight, claims of uncertainty cover only the ulterior motives of individuals aiming to stop needed action. And nine, those who defend uncertainty are bad people. That's the doctrine of certainty that these two authors are talking about.
Sounds like an airtight case or doctrine.
Well, we're told that if you don't believe this, you're just out on the fringe, you're not getting with reality, or you don't care about Mother Earth, and you're a bad citizen, and you need to do something about it. See, you're the problem, Todd. You'd get in your car and you drive down the road and carbon dioxide is going in the air. Don't you feel guilty?
You're making me feel bad now, Bob. I want you to stop that. Let's go on with this.
Okay.
How do we combat this, Doctor? What sort of information have we got to argue against it?
Well, there's plenty, and this book explains it in many different ways, beginning with the science and the issues. And they even start talking about politics, and they point out that people make decisions and political decisions in a way that doesn't always mean they're in keeping with what's real or what's true. There's motivations for groups to make decisions, and are pretty good at analyzing that.
Mm-hmm. What are some of their theories? Have they got any methodology that differs from the official doctrine?
Well, they begin by explaining what we know and what we can't know and why we can't know what we can't know. Now, when it comes to climate, there is a huge number of variables that all it simultaneously influence what happens in climate. Okay?
Right.
And what they show is that this process that creates climate is so irreducibly complex that it's impossible to have even a climate theory. In other words, you can't write a series of mathematical equations and plug in the data, mm-hmm. and out will come what the climate's going to be 10 years from now. It's not even possible.
Well, your local weatherman will have difficulty predicting the weather 3 days out with all of the data they've got and the historical data.
Right.
How much harder is this compared to that?
Well, way harder.
Right.
And they've been wrong in their forecast here in the Twin Cities for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is true.
Okay, so that interesting thing, and I make a point in my article about this, is one of our local weather persons who writes for the paper is always talking about global warming. In fact, today he had more about it in his little blurb. And when it comes to predicting the local forecast, he admits that there's such complexity that it's never going to be a perfect science. There's always uncertainty, and they cannot be sure about it. But the same guy who knows he cannot know for sure tomorrow's weather is absolutely certain that he knows what the climate is and what it's going to be for the next however many years. And he actually claims that he knows that humans creating carbon dioxide are causing the climate to warm. And I know for a fact that this man cannot know that. He cannot know that, and he should know that he cannot know it. So the question is, why is he certain? And I'm not saying he's not a smart guy. So why is a smart guy believing in absurdity? That's the question we need to ask, because you take that guy, multiply times billions of people on the earth, we've got a whole planet full of people believing the doctrine of global warming as if it were a religious tenet that they're willing to die for.
This is true. This is seen in government. It's seen in the popular culture. It's seen in entertainment, and it's seen in advertising. It has permeated our society, this doctrine and this religion. You said it yourself very well. You're a bad person if you contribute to this problem, and you're not going to do anything about it.
Exactly. Now, what Essex and McKendrick talk about is what they call official science, okay? And they say that you need to know the difference between science and official science, or you won't understand what's going on. Now, I just watched a DVD on this topic that you loaned me, Todd.
Right.
Great DVD, and it confirms basically what these guys say in their book, the same arguments, the same issues. And they talk about how these panels get assigned, whether it's by the United Nations or the United States government, whoever. They create a panel of people that are hired to give them advice about science, because the people making decisions, they don't know science.
They know nothing.
They don't know what a differential equation is and fluid dynamics and all the stuff that you need to know to understand climate.
Mm-hmm.
So they get together a panel, and as it was showing on the DVD, some of these people are told what they're supposed to believe.
Right.
And real scientists that know better just drop out because they don't want anything to do with it.
I could give you personal experience. Now, I work in government, in transportation, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot to do with roadway weather and traffic and reporting conditions. I was at a conference in Boulder, Colorado a year ago, hosted by the National Weather Service, a branch of theirs, there were professional meteorologists who, at lunch break, naturally we're going to talk about global warming, couldn't believe that there was a program here to promote this sky is falling, we better do something quick about global warming. They said there is no data to back this up. I don't know who's giving them the data, but it is a politically motivated sort of an argument.
Yeah, it's absolutely politically motivated. It's not science.
Right.
It's not the truth. And so the real scientists just say, I don't get that. They just, in fact, Essex and McKendry claim that many scientists just get out of the argument because if they say anything, they're ridiculed.
Right.
All right. Oh, you're fringy. You're a contrarian. You're not getting with the program.
If you're not with the program, you're a quack and not a real scientist.
Exactly.
A real scientist would discover this to be true, like we have.
Yeah, but that's not the way it really is. So we have what they call official science. And global warming, the doctrine of global warming is true because official science declared it to be true. So what's official science? Is it science? No. It's panels put together when non-scientists need to decide something that requires expertise, and so they come in and they testify. So rather than ideas being debated and put through rigorous tests, and theories are tested against the real world and by people who are capable of looking at the work that's been done, you get a political process going, and here's what McKendrick and Essex say. So a political struggle replaces testing an idea. That's what's going on. That's official science. And official science has told us global warming is true. Everybody believes it. No credible person doesn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Humans are causing it, and we must do something, and we must do something globally. So we got to get the whole world together on this, and we've got to quit producing carbon dioxide. Now, I wrote an article before on this after I read Al Gore's book, Earth in the Balance. Reading that book, I realized that he's operating from a neo-pagan worldview.
Sure.
And he believes that God is in everything. And in fact, he said the universe is like a hologram and every little piece of the hologram has the whole within it. It's a panentheistic worldview. And Gore claims that humans have launched a holocaust. He uses the term holocaust, that we have launched an onslaught against the environment, and it's like a holocaust, and that we need to create a Marshall Plan, like after World War II, to rebuild after all the damage we've done. Now, how did we do this? What was our evil sin? What was the wickedness that made you and I and every other human like Hitler? We just lived. We're just eating food, heating our house, cooking our food, driving our cars, breathing the air. That makes us evil, wicked persons who have launched a Holocaust-like assault against the planet.
Now, hasn't Gore referred to this as the great sin? We have sinned against Earth by producing CO2.
Yeah, that's his definition of sin, is humans being alive on the Earth. And so, as I pointed out in that article I wrote for Christian Worldview Network on this topic, Al Gore's definition of sin is something we can't repent of. How do you repent of creating CO2?
How do you repent of breathing, inhaling, exhaling, yeah, respiration?
Yeah, maybe for some of our listeners who haven't studied chemistry, when you burn a hydrocarbon, and God created the world we live in such a way that there's hydrocarbons everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oil's a hydrocarbon. Wood's a hydrocarbon. And when you burn a hydrocarbon, if it's a very clean burn, the purest burn will give you, as a result, carbon dioxide and water. Those are the two byproducts of any burning of hydrocarbons.
Even the purest burn?
Yeah, the cleaner it is, the more you get nothing but CO2 and water. By the way, I studied chemical engineering, and I was a junior in chemical engineering when I became a Christian.
Right,
so
I
understand these things, okay?
Good, because you're talking to a communications major with an English minor. So it's good that they were explaining this a little bit.
Okay, so that's why we talk about breathing. Our body burns hydrocarbons for us to live. And so the product is carbon dioxide and water. And that way, if you breathe on a mirror, you see the water vapor.
Yeah.
It's because you're burning hydrocarbons. Okay, so the global warming doctrine says that carbon dioxide is the problem, and putting it in the atmosphere is polluting the atmosphere and is going to create future global warming. So therefore, it's a sin to do that. You're sinning against the environment, but you can't repent of the sin because it's impossible to be alive as a human without producing CO2.
Sounds simple enough.
Yeah, so what are you supposed to do?
I'm going to ask you that. Where do we go from here? What happens?
Well, Todd, you need to start feeling more guilty.
I feel worse than I did when we began this show, I'll say that.
Okay. So you create guilt in people's minds because they believe it, and so they think, well, I got to do something. Like the doctrine says that these authors are talking about, doing something is better than doing nothing.
Ah.
So, well, I'll go get a electric car, or I'll take the bus, or what have you. So you can't really quit doing CO2, you just do less. But the radical deep ecology and really radical environmentalists say that really what needs to happen is most of the Earth's population needs to die.
Is that a fact?
There's people that have come out and said that. Most of them won't admit that they were thinking that way. But the fact is there's 6 billion plus people on Earth. Every single one of those persons is a net producer of carbon dioxide, more or less. If you live in a little hut in a remote village and you heat your water with burning wood, right, you produce less. If you live in a developed nation, you're going to produce more because you're more efficient at using energy. In other words, you're using gas and natural gas and what have you.
Are you saying that their goal is to reduce the population, or is that a goal?
Well, in Gore's book, his goal is to stop it right now. No more people.
Okay.
You know, stop population growth altogether. That's in Earth in a Balance. But the radical people think that there should only be maybe, so I've seen different numbers, 200,000 humans or a couple million humans.
On the entire Earth.
Yeah, they don't want the humans to use the fact that they're rational and they're created in God's image as an advantage over any other species.
Sure.
Okay. So being industrialized, we're using our advantages. I'm not saying everybody believes the radical version of it. Okay, but it's out there. But this is birthed in a pagan world view. And I believe that this global warming, which is a myth, is created for the purpose of promoting a pagan worldview. Because Christian beliefs, they see as a terrible threat.
Well, I'm sure they do.
Right, because for example, what did God say in Genesis?
Be fruitful, multiply,
and fill the earth.
Fill the earth, subdue.
And Al Gore defines that as a sin. So we got a question. Is Al Gore going to define sin, or is God going to?
I think we'd better let God define what sin is.
Exactly. Now, maybe we should talk about some of the science.
Let's do. This hockey stick graph that folks have been talking about, and maybe our listeners may not be aware of it. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Actually, that was on that DVD. What was the name of the DVD?
Global Governance or Global Warming.
Yeah, good DVD. And they were showing the hockey stick thing, and there's a whole chapter about it in this book, Taken by Storm. And these scientists created this hockey stick graph that's been flashed all over the world that makes it look like, oh, wow, in the last 100 years, the temperatures have shot off the chart.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was just perfectly flat.
Okay? The curvature of the stick equals the output, the intensity.
The temperature.
Right.
Yeah. Suppose the temperature of the Earth, which they also point out is a myth. You can't stick a thermometer under the Earth's tongue and say, oh, there it is. Here's the temperature.
Right. Too many variables.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that, too. But anyhow, there's the hockey stick graph. So one of the authors of this book, Ross McKittrick, and another scientist just took the data that these guys who made the hockey stick use, the calculations, all of the same stuff, and then just tried to reproduce it, okay, which should have been done a long time ago. But before that was done, the UN had already adopted this thing, and it was taken as proof.
There's policy.
Yeah, here's the smoking gun. Mm-hmm. This shows that we that we have global warming and it's going to be catastrophic and all these bad things are going to happen. So these two scientists just went back and just used the data and the formulas and everything used by these other guys and showed that they'd made serious errors and there was no hockey stick at all.
They've got a baseball bat.
Well, they've got different a graph, but it doesn't show a radical change in the last 100 years.
Right.
And even their data isn't correct, but just using their data, you don't get the hockey stick. And this was so amazing that they were called to testify in front of Congress about it. So the hockey stick was debunked. The hockey stick was a fabrication. The hockey stick graph that they use to show global warming is a myth.
It's a sham.
It's been debunked already.
And I'm sure this information appeared on the front page of every newspaper on Earth.
No.
It did not.
No. In fact, according to that DVD, Al Gore is still showing the hockey stick.
He did in the DVD.
Yeah, he's showing the hockey stick, and it's already been debunked. So something that tells me that some of these people don't even care what science is. They don't even care. They're so on this agenda to stop humans from burning fossil fuels, they don't care.
Let's discuss some of their theories, models, methodology. How do these two arrive at such a different conclusion? Is their data different? Are they studying it differently?
Well, they're pointing out that these models that are used to predict climate are an art and not a science. A model is a work of art done by a person who makes models, okay? And the modeler has to take and eliminate all kinds of variables. They got to take things that are variable and make them constant because the complexity is so great that you can't even write equations that have enough of the variables that would influence the climate. Let's just take one for example. How much of the energy of the sun that comes to the earth is reflected back out? All right. Well, that's a variable.
Sure it is.
It depends on aerosols and things in the air and all kinds of things. It's not always the same. But in a model, it becomes a constant.
They've homogenized all of this.
Well, they have
in this
to.
Case, yeah.
They have to because they have to decide what are we going to leave as a variable and then what are we going to factor in just as a constant or ignore altogether so that we can create some sort of equation that can be calculated by a computer, all right? So the model is not a picture of reality. It's a work of art. Now, McKittrick and Essex show that you could take a certain model that shows future global warming, take one of the things that they made constant, and just change it.
Tweak it a little.
Tweak it a little bit, which it actually does in the real world.
Sure.
Just tweak the one thing that really does change in the real world, plug it back in, and then you get global cooling.
A whole new ballgame.
Yeah. So this thing is absolutely not showing us what actually will happen in the future. Let's go back to our example. The local weather forecaster is using a model.
Mm-hmm.
All right? He has to. There's too many variables. But his model is better. For one thing, a meteorologist has a life experience. He can watch the same things happen year after year after year and see very similar situations and get better at the art part of it.
Right.
Okay? So, you know what? I've seen this situation, and this is what happens.
They use historical data to inform their view of the next 2-3 days.
Yeah, and their data is much better because it's gathered at the same location,
mm-hmm.
and it's something they've worked with before.
Right.
Nobody's worked with climate unless they were alive during the Ice Age, okay? Climate happens over centuries and centuries, not years and years. So the local weather forecaster has many more opportunities to be accurate than a guy studying climate.
Okay? Sure.
All right? So the fact is that the local weather forecaster's model is very imperfect. The climate model is just a slight improvement over a wild hunch.
Not good at all.
Well, the point is, we're not saying that people shouldn't study these things and that they shouldn't try to understand what we can understand about the world. I'm not against science. I studied science. I believe in human rationality. I believe that we can understand the world we live in order to survive on the face of the earth, and we need to. But we can't make public policy based on something that we don't know, cannot know, and is simply kind of a shot in the dark.
What a dangerous place to go, wouldn't you agree?
Well, it just doesn't make any sense to be trying to make conclusions and to tell the entire world population, you have to take action, you have to shut down your industries, you have to impoverish yourself, you need to quit using whatever fuels available to you, whether it's oil from the ground or wood or coal or any other kind of fossil fuel, because we say that you doing that is going to make the earth get warmer, even though we can't possibly know that that's true.
How could we, our society, our industrialized world, how could we continue without people drove vehicles, without they produce CO2?
We can't.
We can't.
No. So you have to stop the industrialization of the world.
Okay. Let's stop the industrialization of the world. We stop commerce. We stop business. We stop trucking. We stop everything. What then?
Well, then millions of people die. And then you start solving the CO2 problem. If you have enough people in the world die of starvation, then you're going to have less people producing carbon dioxide.
Who benefits? The elite?
Nobody. Maybe the people that want to have one world government. Yeah, who benefits? I don't think anybody benefits.
That's the question no one's asking. If there's no one around to reap the benefits,
yeah,
what's the point?
Well, you know, this book that we're talking about, it's a fabulous book. I recommend it, especially if you studied science in a college level or mathematics. I took all this myself. I studied differential calculus. I even had to use differential calculus to do quantum mechanics, which was a pain, and I hated the class. And I saw my notes a few years ago. My mom found my old college paper.
Ah.
It looked like hieroglyphics. I could not do that now. But the point is, it's an excellent book. One of the things that these authors point out is this idea of adaptability, human adaptability. They said it's amazing how humans are adaptable to a lot of things. In other words, people manage to survive in rudimentary ways, even in severe climates like Eskimos.
Okay.
And people survive a lot of difficulties and learn how to adapt to the situation. The more economically prosperous people are, the more adaptable they are. What does that mean? Well, it means, for example, a prosperous people can insulate their houses, they can heat their houses, they can pay for air conditioning.
Develop new means to cope or adapt.
Yeah, and they can use their resources to do research in agriculture, to find crops that will grow under a wider range of climate conditions,
mm-hmm.
crops that will grow better. Actually, we need to talk about that. We'll wait till the next show here. I'm going to talk about CO2 and the environment, okay?
Sure.
But the fact is, the more you impoverish people, the less adaptable they become, and the more they are at the mercy of the elements, so to speak.
More susceptible to their own physical demise.
Yeah, exactly. And so here we have our own leaders. I don't know, the politicians at both parties say they're believers in global warming. And we just got done with a big summit, and they were coming back and talking about global warming and how we have to have global action for global warming. They're believing that we need to impoverish as many people as possible and stop the industrialization of the world in order to, what? Stave off this catastrophe that nobody knows is coming.
Well, there's a catastrophe coming at the end, but we're convinced it's not caused by human beings.
Yeah, God's going to judge the world. They're not even talking about that one.
Right.
They don't believe in it. So, dear Christians, I would urge you to do some reading about this. This article that we're talking about that I wrote is a summary of that book. And so if reading a book on science maybe is a little more than you want to do, you can get issue number 106. It'll be on our website, May, June 2008, issue 106 of Critical Issues Commentary. and get informed about this. We need to start somewhere. Okay. Sure. And of all the people that ought not to be deceived on the face of the earth, Bible-believing Christians should be front and center.
They should be at the front of the line.
Yeah, we should be at the front of the line, not being deceived by this globalist myth of man-caused global warming.
Well, I'm gonna continue to feel bad about driving my sport utility, but okay. I'm sure I'll deal with that. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. If anyone would like to visit our church, remember it's Twin City Fellowship. We're located in Minneapolis. Our phone number is 952-935-3100. Again, 952-935-3100. And we are on the web at www.cicministry.org. For Critical Issues Commentary, Todd Kramus here.
And Bob DeWay.
And thank you, folks. We'll talk again soon.